Hello, everyone. I'm Edean Porter de Leon at Porter de Leon on Twitter, and welcome to episode 127 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. On this show, we talk about the different parts of ourselves that we show to different people, depending on how we want to be perceived.
When the parents come and stay for the weekend, you're probably not going to sit on the sofa eating Cheetos and farting for an hour on end, you know, in front of them. It's just, but that might be who you normally are. We're very, very good at like only showing, you know, certain parts of ourselves, and that's just a social skill.
And how we build trusted relationships while acting as individuals, as well as representatives of a company brand.
Sticking to your ideals and identifying yourself separately from your company, not being afraid to establish who you are as an individual, is actually a really positive thing.
Then we explore the way in which we perceive our own skills within technical and non-technical roles.
It was weird. Like, as an engineer, I constantly had imposter syndrome about being an engineer. And now I have, like, imposter syndrome about playing an engineer on TV. It's like a weird inception that I'm experiencing.
So, do people think you are who you think you are? An odd question for sure, but a relevant one. You see, we're all different people depending on who we're interacting with. We wear different clothes, choose different words, laugh a bit more or a bit less, based on things like the client-vendor code of conduct, or the established professional work culture, or how much we like or don't like Uncle Bob. And we all have an Uncle Bob, who doesn't seem to care what people think, as evident by his clear lack of conversational filter, but maybe he's just being true to himself. And maybe, just maybe, we should do the same. But the practicality of being completely open and completely honest and completely ourselves, or at least the same version of ourselves, with absolutely everyone is quite simply untenable within today's social construct. In the Tom Hanks, Emma Watson movie, The Circle, Tom Hanks is the founder of an omnipresent Big Brother, Facebook, Google type platform, and he posits that when we are the best versions of ourselves, there is nothing we can't accomplish.
I am a believer in the perfectibility of human beings.
At The Circle, we can finally realize our potential. When we are our best selves, there isn't a problem that we cannot solve. We can cure any disease, and we can end hunger.
May's only been with us for a few months, but she has made quite an impression.
So, May, do you think you behave better or worse when you are being watched?
We have cameras in place all over the world right now. Watching you.
However, as this trailer also reveals, it's the perspective of his character that we are the best versions of ourselves when we're being watched. But are we being who we think we are or who we want to be? Are we being our authentic selves when we are around others? And that's the theme of our show today, authenticity. How do we remain authentic to ourselves? And through that, build the trusted relationships with friends, family, coworkers, clients, and companies that will get us the results that we truly need. Well, here's what we found out.
In tech we trust. We're not sure about.
But first, we talked to Jonathan Crossfield at Kimota on Twitter, writer, content marketer, where we talk about corporate brands as it relates to authenticity in social media. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, Jonathan, you wrote a phenomenal article about corporate brands and authenticity entitled, Is Your Brand Really Who It Says It Is? And we're going to dig into it. There's a lot of really great components of it. But as an overview, what was the core meat of what you were trying to get at as the point of the article?
Often the articles that I write for CMI turn out to be a bit of a rant. Whatever sort of got under my skin recently that I've noticed, and then I dig into finding out what would the underlying theme is that led to whatever it was annoying me, silly marketing practices or etc. And this was one where I just for whatever reason stumbled across a few different blog posts on various social media advice sites, of which there are millions, talking about the concept of authenticity and coming out with these bizarre claims that don't really work when you're talking about authenticity, such as the idea that, you know, it's about you need to include authenticity as part of your strategy, but it absolutely isn't about planning or strategizing. Things like that, which is, it just, they're trying to explain authenticity in terms that clearly show that they don't really understand what authenticity is. And that was beginning to annoy me, or at least I wanted to puncture that bubble and say, listen to yourselves, there's something not quite right here.
Yeah, I like the idea of like holding a mirror up to the people who are, you know, who are speaking and not really actually either knowing what they're talking about or completely just absolutely eviscerating or making a huge mess of whatever topic they're trying to explore. And so I think you talked about sort of different things like planning being a part of authenticity. I wanted to just quickly touch on one that was my favorite, which is talking about how being spontaneous needs to be part of authenticity. And in order to do that, you know, when marketers, you know, talk about being more spontaneous, and you had a great section in the piece that I'll read really quick and we can dive into that, where the moment you plan to be spontaneous is the moment the English language finally snaps under the weight of all that cognitive dissonance and retires to a remote island to reflect on where it all went so terribly wrong. Jonathan, what was going through your mind when you wrote that?
Firstly, what's often going through my mind when I'm writing lines like that is, how can I turn this into a joke? With a lot of this stuff, because it's very, very easy, particularly when I'm on a rant, to get very, very dry and serious and so on. So I try and make it, balance the anger with humor.
I like the rant perspective, though, because it really is, this topic is really rant worthy. It is incredibly rant worthy, because I've been in meetings myself, marketing meetings, and where the people talk about, well, let's, you know, this is what we need to do in order to really, you know, engage with the community and really feel like we're, you know, really being, you know, authentic, or whether we're really sort of meaning to do well. It's like, and it's once you start to plan that, once it becomes a PowerPoint, you know, bullet on a deck, you really sort of lose the whole point. I mean, is there, from your perspective, is there really no substitute for actually caring and then engaging in a relevant manner?
Well, that's right. I think that's extremely valid. I mean, I'm being more authentic, I suppose, in my own writing by allowing my sometimes less than tactful viewpoint to creep through.
Well, that resonates. Being less than tactful, I think, resonates incredibly well.
Well, it's me being honest, looking and saying, you don't have to agree with me. This is what I think, and I'm going to state it plainly and then hopefully in an as entertaining way as possible. So it's, if I was to be polite and do the usual, you know, 5-point listicle about 5 ways you can be better with authenticity, which is the sort of stuff you see out there.
Oh, so you need to come up with the 10 best practices for authenticity.
Yeah, that's what's already out there. And of course,
the moment you read this, authenticity dies.
Exactly, because it doesn't give you enough of a jolt, or it doesn't state the point of view strong enough, and often they don't even have a point of view, it's just too balanced. I'm a big believer that content should have, should take a side, pick a side, don't sit on the fence, don't say, well, so-and-so says this, and on the other side says that. Pick a side and own it, because that's how discussions happen. And so I use my column in a very, very similar way. It's quite funny because sometimes when I go back and read my older columns from years ago, sometimes there'll be things in there I go, actually, I disagree with that now. But that just shows I was, you know, speaking my mind in the moment. So, yes, it's this idea of planning to be spontaneous, which is where we were getting to here, is one I kept coming up against. It's sort of like, how do we do this? And the moment, of course, you ask yourself, how do I become spontaneous? You're no longer spontaneous. The moment you're saying, how do I appear authentic? You're no longer authentic. And I think that's what it boiled down to. A lot of this stuff was about the wanting to appear authentic rather than actually to genuinely be authentic, which is not unusual in the marketing space. We're all about smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. And I think that in that one-to-many demand gen engine environment, you want to... Organizations tend to have this bad habit of trying to find hacks for everything. We're like, well, authenticity is incredibly effective. We could increase Twitter engagement by 30% by being authentic. Let's go ahead and research that. which it completely, absolutely destroys. I think that's where the English language breaks under the cognitive dissonance. That's, I think that's what you were talking about right there.
Looking for a hack is a very, very good description of how a lot of marketers do this kind of stuff. It's like, what's the quick silver bullet technique that I can use to achieve that or appear that way, rather than actually understanding what that thing is underneath and just being that way.
I think when you take a programmatic approach at something like authenticity, it turns into an initiative, and that initiative becomes then a project or multiple projects. Those projects have tasks. And then somewhere nested in there is like, look up, you know, top 10 best practices of authenticity that was assigned to somebody, and they come back with a presentation to, you know, to tell the brand how to become more authentic. And how do we do this in social media? So from your perspective, Jonathan, is, and this has come out of some of my conversations on the topic, and this is how I view it. I feel very strongly about this, that authenticity, along with many other things, is not a destination. It's not a state of mind. It's not a being. It's not binary. It's a journey. It's an effort. It's an endeavor. And you can fall outside of it just like you can fall off the wagon, and start drinking again. You could start becoming inauthentic. But then you can get back on the wagon and really stay true to yourself or your ideals. Is that your perspective?
I think so, because I think that it's impossible to be 100% authentic.
I would agree with you.
As I go on to say in the article, you know, even you and me talking now, I mean, like, you know, each of us will be processing multiple calculations in our head before we open our mouth to speak in any way, to calculating, you know, should I say it this way or should I say it that way? Which one will make me look better? You know,
There's that element going on right now. For all of you listening right now, there's a compromise to authenticity once you begin a podcast. It's very small, but it's there.
but in any social interaction, it's like, you know, we will maybe do certain things in private that we wouldn't necessarily do in front of someone else. I mean, like, you know, it's when the parents come and stay for the weekend, you're probably not going to sit on the sofa eating Cheetos and farting for an hour on end, you know, in front of them. It's just, but that might be who you normally are. We're very, very good at like only showing, you know, certain parts of ourselves. And that's just a social skill. And I think it's sort of come out of that is knowing that we have a sort of public mask that we put on. And social media, of course, ramps this up to the nth degree because we have even more control over what we share about ourselves. And we can even, I'm sure we all know people like this, those people who will stage sorts of, photo ops, if you like. Well, that's where the selfie came from, I guess, into social media.
Instagram.
Look, Instagram is full of this. I have such a scintillating, exciting life. I'm more interesting than you kind of thing. And of course, that's not the reality for most of us. You know, I mean, social media gives us those glimpse of those little fragments out of a person's life, many of them that may be staged or carefully curated, but they're not necessarily representative of that person's authentic life. So we do it naturally anyway. So there's no such thing as true 100% authenticity. I think it's being aware of it. I think it's being aware that what I'm doing here is curating what I say or curating what I do in front of an audience or in front of someone else or on social media. And being careful not to ever present something that is contradictory to who I really am. You know, you don't want to be when you're 100% inauthentic is when, of course, you are putting forward an ideal that actually you don't believe in private, for example. And let's say that, you know, some brands aren't necessarily averse to that either.
I'd imagine that from a brand perspective, and maybe you can give this as a final thought, from, let's say, if you're giving a company advice to really engage with whatever community or audience they're really trying to provide value to, if indeed that is their goal, and let's hope that it is. As a first step, would you really just sort of shake them, you know, in your rant style and just say, look, there's no substitute for actually listening to people, actually understanding what they need. What would be that first step that you would say, look, this is how you need to change your perspective so that you don't have any articles online that will really just set me off into another rant and call you out?
Funnily enough, when I'm in actually meetings with clients and businesses and so on, I don't tend to be quite as ranty as I am in my articles because I often don't get invited back. But maybe I'm not being so authentic. Maybe
existing
I'm being
existing somewhere on your authenticity scale. Yeah.
Yeah, but I've got to be a bit more tactful. And it's I find the best way is they need to learn by experience, because they all think that somehow they're the ones who are going to crack the easy way of doing this. And that's true of everything, not just authenticity. Every brand wants to take the easy road until they realize that that's actually the hard road. And so it's looking at and analyzing their existing content or their existing social media comms and looking and saying, why are all of these answers here scripted? Because look, in a one by one, they might sound like they make a good idea because you've scripted them so that your community team always knows what to say. But go and have a look at your Facebook page or your Twitter page and look at them all together. And anyone looking at that can see that it's all clearly scripted. You know, what's the impression? You've really got to show them, I think, rather than just tell them. And it's about getting them to trust their team, because authenticity often, or this attempt to fabricate it, often comes out of the need to control that a lot of businesses have. We don't trust our social media teams, for example, to just be themselves. We've got to give them scripts and we've got to give them 100 page guidelines and we've got to say, thou shalt not do this, this, and this, which of course is where the makes them sound robotic and inauthentic to start with. And then, of course, on top of that, they say, yes, but we want you to be authentic as well. So here's some scripts that use some slang.
I love that. Here's a script so that you can be more authentic.
Well, that's it. It's like they realize then they have a problem because everything sounds so robotic and forced and unnatural. And so they then say, but you've got to be authentic too. So I think it's just getting to realize that, you know, if you hire the right people, if you have the right team and you include them in the process and they're knowledgeable enough about your product or your brand or whatever the case may be, to be able to talk about it without having to be scripted, stop being so scared that someone's going to say the wrong thing or refer to the product in the wrong way, train them and then trust them. And you'll find authenticity comes out of that. I think we're in the age where everyone is looking not only for the silver bullet and the hack, like you said before, but also to make sure that there is no margin for error. And so we end up with tone guides that list every word you're allowed to use and every word you're not allowed to use. And it's always the corporate buzzwords. And you end up with everybody sounding the same, which again isn't authentic. So I think it's slowly getting them to trust their employees and helping them, encouraging them to give those employees a natural voice, you know, allow them to play on social media, allow them to create their own content in their own voice, as long as it representing the brand, honestly, trying to get them to represent the brand, but on your terms is always going to be jarring.
Just to sum up, I like the fact that you mentioned trust, because I think that's a key component and really sort of the result or the end game of an authentic, you know, any authentic effort. And so I guess to engender this trust, create a culture that helps enable people to become empowered to use their own voice and communicate in their own way to, like you said, avoid crushing your authenticity under a landslide of corporate buzzwords.
That's right. That's right. I think this is obviously harder for large organizations where there'll be like, you know, layer upon layer upon layer of management and each one is trying to control the layers below them, which is often is where this stuff grows. But in short, it is about making sure that the most authentic voice has to come from inside the business. So if you're hiring external agencies to be authentic on your behalf, you're already being inauthentic to start with. So it's about finding those voices within the business and encouraging them and giving them the briefest of guardrails, because obviously you want them to stay within certain norms. You don't want suddenly someone hosting frat parties in the office, but at the same time, or you know, making unsavory political commentary or whatever, but at the same time allowing them the freedom to be themselves, which is what you would hope is the reason they work for your business in the first place. If you're hiring people who actually want to work for you because they're passionate about whatever it is you do, or they're part of that, or then give them a voice.
I think it all ties into that, is why do they work there in the first place and represent that?
Jonathan, I think you've given brands a lot to think about, and I look forward to reading some of your rants in the future.
Thank you.
I encourage you to go on the Content Marketing Institute, look up the phenomenal piece that Jonathan's wrote. Is your brand really who it says it is? Jonathan, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Next, I talk with Amy Lewis at Comms Ninja on Twitter, Director of Influence Marketing at NetApp SolidFire, about authenticity as it relates to your individual versus your corporate brand. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you on. Now, I know you have some interesting views on authenticity, and I wanted to get at the core of what you think about how people and brands can be either authentic or inauthentic. But more importantly, is that even the right question to be asking? I mean, once an organization or let's say an individual says, okay, now I'm going to be authentic, have you already lost the battle? Is it like being like Neo in the Matrix? Either you're like the one or you're just not, like as the Oracle tells him.
Well, it cracks me up because the fact that we have to live in a day and age where we have to learn how to be authentic. You know, it's something we knew when we were kids, and then we forgot to do it anymore. And maybe we should have been, you know, shaped a little bit, because, you know, you ask a kid, does this shirt look ugly? Be ready for the answer, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think you had like a slider bar. Like if you're on one end of the slider bar, you get different answers depending on, you know, where you're at.
Right. And as adults, we move away from truly sparing a friend from an ugly shirt. And the guilt in marketing can be, it moves right into a beautiful fashion choice, right? And then you've got romp hems, which are, you know, taking the marketplace by storm. So it moves from a shirt to a romp hem. I think that's the danger.
Shirts to romp hems. And that's interesting. Now I've got this interesting mental image now.
So in all seriousness, you know, I think it's something we have to get back in touch with and be reassured that being yourself, sticking to your ideals and identifying yourself separately from your company, not being afraid to establish who you are as an individual is actually a really positive thing. Companies are amorphous things, kind of comprised of people in the end. They do have images, they do have brands, but I'm not sure a company can be authentic. I'd have to chew on that. A person, though, absolutely can be.
Well, let me press on that button then about companies being authentic, because I read some interesting stuff from Glenn Carroll, who's a Stanford professor, and he's been doing this research apparently for many years now. And I love it because, I mean, he caught my attention because he started out with the craft beer brewing industry and the authenticity around that. So right away he had me. And he really talked about how people who are sort of consuming what brands had to give you really viewed authenticity as, you know, a really valued authenticity and would rate people whether they were authentic or not. And then there would be a premium then charged for that value that was derived from the authenticity, which sort of already seemed to like sort of destroy the whole argument of authenticity when authenticity is then, you know, valued and then there's a premium to that. And then,
right. I'm more authentic than you.
Yeah. Exactly. It's all so this craft beer, and in line with craft beer too, it was like it wasn't that the beer tasted better or that it was the flavors of hops and all that stuff. It was that apparently people thought, had this perception that, well, you know, it was made by monks up in the mountains or something like
right.
that. Who knows? And they prescribed that authenticity to that brand, and then, you know, we're like, you know, identified, you know, that.
Or like when we found out that some sparkling or fresh spring water was actually coming from the local tap with a label on it.
Yeah, that just breaks your heart, doesn't it? And then when you like, you get a great craft brewery and also you're like, oh, look at it, it's by Budweiser. Or you have this wonderful, like, you know, like Odwalla, like, you know, that was a Santa Cruz brand. And it was great. And all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, Coca-Cola owns this now? It's really not authenticity. Maybe it's just that trust, which I guess ultimately is that goal of, you know, authenticity, is you're really just trying to build trust. And then when that trust is broken is when you consider that brand's not authentic anymore.
Well, I can see how, I think that matters more, and actually hit right on the one where it matters, or I can see it resonating. Food and beverage, not just consumer industry, but I would say in particular food and beverage would be one of those things where authenticity would matter. You know, is this an authentic, you know, Italian style pizza, or, you know, is this craft bread, or anything? You can sort of see where those words make sense. It is very hard for me to see the word in the same way as it regards to, is this an authentic server or is this one of the,
yeah. It's pretty funny. Artisanal servers.
I'm going to swirl. It's very fruit forward. You know, I mean, what is this?
Very fruity, very nutty, bold on the nose, and really nice smooth finish to it.
So I think in some ways, at what we do in technology, companies' authenticity is maybe like a wing of culture, but it's built by the people who support that culture and give that culture life and provide that company that brand identity. So I would separate brand identity a little bit from authenticity. Whereas, and I like your analogy or your thread you're pulling through about trust, because I think the reason we want people to be authentic is we want to know that they are who they are, they say what they mean, and they are reliable. It is a form of trust to be their true selves and not say one thing, mean another. I mean, it's just it's a classic case of we want to be sure of who you are and that you stay and remain who you are within reason. People can evolve and grow, but let's think about a bad rap salespeople often get of tell you whatever you want to hear, right? So you can't figure out where that person's core sits. And so you think, is that their authentic? Is that their real opinion? Or are they telling me what I want to hear? And, you know, we go deep into the psychology of that, but it's why sociopaths are upsetting. I keep talking about that book that I love, but I happened to see it in the bookstore yesterday. But The Sociopath Next Door, it's my favorite. It's the best title of a book, I think, ever. It's so easy to remember and so over the top. But it's what people, when there's, in all seriousness, some serious issue with someone and we can't get a read on them and we don't know why we can't relate to them, it's very upsetting. So authenticity helps you bypass that. Knowing who you are and honoring that and all your interactions makes everything go more easily.
I love how you put that, because it's something that's really built over time. It's not something that you sort of switch on. Like a company will come in and say, okay, now we need to really be authentic and let's get it done in the next 2 quarters.
Oh yeah, no. Although I can see that happening in a marketing meeting, and that's why we who carry the Scarlet M get a bad name and probably need to make fun of ourselves often to not become those people.
I'm trying to start the sort of self-loving marketer movement.
I feel like there's probably a Fish soundtrack to go with that.
Yeah. It's working. I just say positive affirmations while looking at myself in the mirror. That's how it starts. But I think the whole trust and authenticity takes time, and sincerity, I think, is at the core of it, I think, is key. And I think one thing I always like to point out when I'm talking to people about this, and I know you have opinions on this, well, it's not a binary thing. You're not just like either you are authentic or you're not authentic at any given moment of time. It's really more of like, it's like a journey, or it's like, it's something like when you build trust, it's really just sort of a level of trust you're building. And if you're consistently, let's say, authentic, and you're yourself and you're trustworthy and you can deliver on that promise with your actions and your words, your opinions, and separating the sort of yourself from the brand is, I think, always critical in that. And then a brand might just really be a collection of the experience any one person or organization has with that brand. And if you've got a collection of people who are being authentic and are building trust, then you're building that. Maybe you're building authenticity in a brand. I'm still trying to figure out how brands can be authentic, Amy.
I think brands can start toward authenticity. They can build trust, right? I think you can trust a brand and that will lead to that feeling of authenticity. If the people who support your brand, the messages you give are true and accurate and you stay engaged and you repeat, repeat, repeat. People want you to carry through on what you say you'll carry through with. I mean, we're sort of joking, but that bottled water example is a classic, right? People were really annoyed to find out they'd been paying for tap water that was just bottled somewhere else. And that takes time to recover from. So I think that you say what you mean and you stand behind it and you repeat, repeat, repeat. But I think that's about the people you hire. It's about the way you conduct your business. It's about corporate culture. I think there's a lot that can lend itself toward trust. But yeah, authenticity, I'm not sure.
There's no way like a company can like make someone feel that this is a real, you know, cage-free, rack-free, free-range server, organic.
See, that's it. It's a rack-free server.
It's lived a good life. It's
all the components are just in the wild, pecking away at the grass.
Mm-hmm. So when it reaches your data center, it's had this free life.
The data may be free-range data, but that's a whole other subject.
It is a whole other subject. Well, let me wrap up on one final thing too, and I think this. I'll go back to the research done by Glenn Carroll, the Stanford professor, and he talks about two different kinds of authenticity. One is that the socially constructed one, and that's does this you know, restaurant or brand, you know, meet some set of categories of authenticity. If it does, then yes, it's authentic. Like, let's say it's an authentic restaurant or it's an authentic car or something like that. But then there's the human potential movement definition, which talks about, you know, do you think I'm an authentic person? You know, do you think I'm sincere? And you know, have I made my own moral choices or am I reading off of a script? And I think that's the one we're really talking about. And I don't think that one can ever apply to a brand. I would definitely agree with you on that. So I think we're really more talking about that socially constructed authenticity, where a brand could develop sort of a list of criteria that it could adhere to in order to remain true to whatever that, you know, corporate mission. But I think the question I have in all of that is, do you think the issue comes when you start to scale something out, or you start to mass produce something, or you start to go from a one-to-one to a one-to-many conversation, that you then authenticity is threatened with, well, now I'm going to make 1,000 of these every month instead of one of these every month. This, you know, this handcrafted artisanal server is going to be like now 1,000 of these artisanal servers, and you know, and does that change? Is that where you start to threaten authenticity when it comes to, you know, a brand or maybe even a person?
I would say yes, and there again, it's why you have to tend it. It's not something that I think you just leave alone. I would actually frame the question slightly differently and flip it back and say, if you are careful about your authenticity, your own personal authenticity, you get to take it with you wherever you go. You're likely to change companies, roles, et cetera. You'll evolve. If you maintain that kind of personal individual branding, you can scale it over a career, a lifetime, through wherever you land, because you've sort of held that to your own. It sort of, in my mind, makes the point of authenticity. I'm not sure the word applies easily to what we do because of the scale people work at, and your point at how do you multiply that times 1,000. The free range server, the free range data becomes more compromised at that point.
Page free.
I like the rack free. That's nice. Oh, yeah. I can see it stamped on the carton.
Yeah, fantastic. And it'll come in like one of those wood crates with like straw in it.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, Amy, thank you so much for joining the show. I appreciate you having this conversation. I think you've given me a lot to think about.
Thank you.
Next, I sit down with Lauren Malhoit at Malhoit on the Twitters to talk about how we could record the most authentic segment of the show possible. Lauren, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Yadin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. So we had a little bit of banter. Are you at... You at Cisco Live right now?
Not Cisco Live. I'm getting ready for Cisco Live, but I'm just on campus, you know, enjoying the openness of, I guess, tech working these days.
There you go. You're in the Cisco Live green room. speaking of green room, I know you are on TV now that you're a internet TV sensation, as I say.
Right.
And so keeping on the theme of the show, I guess. What I wanted to sort of explore with you is with regards to, you know, as an individual, you know, each of us do the things that we do. And I always sort of like to describe this as a Venn diagram. So all the things that you want to do is one of the circles, and yeah, all the things you have to do is another one of the circles. And where they overlap was where you're kind of really riding the wave and, you know, making things happen. And so we want that, you know, those two circles to really overlap as much as possible. So, mm-hmm. I mean, do you find it, you know, any difficulty, or maybe actually, where do you find the most success in, you know, in really, you know, finding the passion and really caring about what you're doing and how it overlaps with, you know, the job you have or the event you're at or the people you're engaging with?
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting, right? I mean, I came up through the ranks as, you know, an engineer, as someone who's actually doing IT for a living, you know, working in the data center, all of that good stuff. And then, you know, I went to be a technical marketing engineer at Cisco, and I you know, had labs and all of that, of course, but I wasn't, you know, working for a customer. My job was not to keep someone's IT environment up and running anymore. It was more to write white papers and, you know, do trainings, make presentations on how certain products work, right?
So you're saying you don't just play an engineer on TV?
Well, but now I do. And that's where I've landed now.
But you got the street cred. I mean, you've actually done it. I think that's one thing that's key when somebody's going out there and really talking about stuff. You've really, really done it. And maybe you can kind of talk about how you made that transition and how you feel like you can really talk with authority, even though you're, let's say, on a podcast or you're on a TV show on the internet. it's more than just you speaking, you know, as the voice of a brand, you know, like a company. You actually care about, you know, helping people do what they do better.
Yeah, I mean, I truly hope that's what we do. You know, on our show, we try to be as educational as possible, as authentic as possible, if you will. But
that was good.
But at the same time, we do work for a vendor. We work for a company, and that's our job, is to talk about our products, right? And yes, while I do have the street cred, it's interesting as I get further and further away, you know, how much of that do I lose? I mean, it was weird. Like, as an engineer, I constantly had imposter syndrome about being an engineer. And now I have, like, imposter syndrome about playing an engineer on TV. It's like a weird inception that I'm experiencing. But,
this
I mean,
can't win either way.
Truly.
I love it.
Yeah. I just had to learn to do that. But, yeah, I do. I absolutely love what I do now, because I don't, honestly, everyone is like, so what do you do when you're not shooting? Or like, they think it's just like a side job that I have. And I'm like, no, that's my only job now, is to like make videos, which, you know, everyone's like, that's not a job. But, you know.
That's funny. That's what my kid said. My little 8-year-old came up to me one time. He's like, Daddy, what are you doing? I told her what, you know, she was doing. Uh-huh. I'm working. He looked at my laptop. She's like, Daddy, that's not working.
how does this family survive? Yeah. But I mean, I get concerned about getting further and further away. And of course, you know, I can do things to learn and to keep current and still be in labs and still, you know, talk to folks. But there is a constant battle with being authentic, not only to myself, but being truly excited about the technology that I'm talking about, and not just, oh, well, someone told me it has these features, so, I mean, that's cool, and we must be better than everyone else, right? Like, I do try to research that and to get into why, you know, why it might be better, why it might not be as good, or, you know, and then I just don't talk about those things, right? No, I'm kidding, but...
Yeah, and it's good. And I think, and I struggled with this as well, kind of, especially coming into a marketing role. And
yeah.
Give me your experiences. But mine was like, because I come from a professional services background. So even after the product comes in, after all the dev comes in, after the product is sold, my reputation and my mode was to actually get it up and running in production at scale and solving all the crazy hard problems. Like, it doesn't matter what the data sheet says. I need to get it running in your environment no matter
right.
what crazy stuff is happening. And I mean, that was just, I was over the moon. I was like a kid in a candy store. I loved being at these huge companies, seeing how the sausage was made and how crazy things were at huge brands that you think would have it all together. But then coming together and being part of their team and really helping them through every step, working with engineering, solving the really, really hard problems. And that was just super thrilling to me. And I thought, well, you know, I can, instead of a one-to-one, maybe I can do, you know, a one-to-many, which is exactly what I get to do now. And I get to just talk to lots and lots and lots of people. But at the same time, you know, there's that struggle of, you know, hey, how do I make sure that I maintain that street cred? I know what's going on with the product. I stay technical. And do you have that struggle? Is that struggle real for you, Lauren?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's especially like Cisco has so many products that you can't possibly be up to date on every single one of them. Like, you know, not in depth, right? I mean, you can, of course, know the kind of broad, you know, statements about what it does and the new features coming out, the next version or whatever, but you can't possibly be an expert on all of it. So it's kind of a fine line of knowing when to not deep dive anymore too, right? Like, at what point does it become an exercise in futility? Do I really need to know this stuff to pass on to customers? Because I'm not the expert in that, you know, let's say in voice or something like that. I'm never going to be that expert. I don't have a lot of experience in that.
And I think that's one fascinating point. And do you think maybe it's just you're moving from being like, you know, maybe that hunter-gatherer in the tribe to be one of the tribe leaders, and maybe not necessarily a leader, but just sort of one of the people that sort of aggregates a lot of knowledge, like, because you always rely on somebody else. I mean, like, even the SEs, the evangelists, they rely on the engineers. The engineers rely on maybe the, you know, the CTO. It's, I mean, there's this ecosystem of people who have to work together in order to deliver something of value to somebody else and help them make progress. And it's not just the technical person, and it's not just the person who can get up on stage and talk about it.
You're right. Yeah. You said like one to many. I think that's a great way of putting it, you know, and I guess I'd thought of it, but I hadn't really thought of that before, you know, rather than talking to one customer, giving presentations to 30 or being, you know, on a show that reaches thousands, whatever, you know, I think that's a really good way. And you know, in a 20-minute show or a half hour show, you can't deep dive on everything and you can't possibly answer everyone's questions, especially if they are an expert in that area. So yeah, you're right. You want to, like, I want to be excited about what I'm talking about. And if I'm not excited about it, then I think I'm a little too, transparent, I guess, in my facial features and other such things, so that I think it would come across if I weren't excited. But you're right. I can't be that deep dive for everyone either. It's get people excited enough to, you know, look it up themselves or talk to someone who is an expert, right?
Yeah, and one thing, though, I wanted to sort of unpack, too, was that you said was maybe you're not the one who's the most excited or the most knowledgeable, but you're going to know somebody who is. Mm-hmm. And for every product or every feature or every mode, there's going to be somebody who's really excited about it, loves it, and you know what? They're the one you're going to want to talk to. And if you're talking to 30 different people at a show and three or four, you know, come up and say, hey, I want to really know about X, Y, and Z. You know, hey, let's go in deep on that. It's like, no, let me pass you off to my colleague here. This person just absolutely loves it. And, and even if you're not passionate about it, you're excited about the fact that you're able to engage with that person and help that person and send them in the right direction.
That's so true. It's like, yeah, I forget which book Malcolm Gladwell, you know, talks about connectors. You know, some people are connectors. Some people are, I forget the other two or three that he said, you know, but people play these roles and some people are connectors. And I like playing that role of the connector. Here's someone who's an expert. Here's someone who's just great to talk to. You know, like, you guys would get along well, or, you know, I think that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess there's always this conversation because everyone's on a journey, you know, and mm-hmm. way along the journey, there's going to be a different person who's going to kind of guide them. And I like being in that mode of, like, every time you're engaging with somebody, you're finding out where are you on the path, and let me see if I'm the best person to take you to that next fork in the road and tell you whether to turn left or turn right. And if I'm not, I'm going to hand you off to the next guide so you can kind of continue that journey. And you might come back down the path and you might meet me again, or I might meet you further mm-hmm. down. But I think that's really, going back to sort of that theme of authenticity, it's really, if you're going out and you're engaged with anyone on any platform, in person, on Twitter, wherever you are, it's really trying to identify for me where they are in that journey and how I can help.
Yeah, and you have to be able to accept that maybe you're not the expert, too. And I think, you know, a lot of technology people have a hard time letting go or passing them on to someone who might know more than them. You know what I mean? You have to be okay with not being the expert. And I am okay with that.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal. One of the most powerful things you can learn is how to successfully say, I don't know, mm-hmm. but I know somebody who does.
Right.
And I found people, just find themselves in just, they're sticking their feet in their mouths and causing huge problems mm-hmm. by not admitting they don't know.
Right.
And then two, also just being really fake and just, you know, and just feeling like they have to, you know, present this facade that they know everything about X, Y, and Z. Otherwise mm-hmm. that someone will lose confidence in them. And one of the biggest, you know, I mean, the whole reasons we're talking about authenticity is because we're ultimately trying to build trust with a mm-hmm. group of people or an individual. And the worst thing you could possibly do to destroy that trust is just to be fake and pretend you know something when you don't know it. And it's amazing how much trust you can build when someone comes to you and knows that you're not going to be fake with them. You're going to say, I don't know, but I know the person who does. And they're going to come back to you again and again and again. And that's what's going to build the trust and build that bond in the relationship.
I totally agree. I love the way you kind of summed that up.
Yeah, it's all about the people.
Yep.
Well, Lauren, this is fantastic. I know you got to step out of the green room and into your amazing world of being internet TV sensation. So I'm going to let
you're going to make my head. You're going to give me a big head and then I won't be authentic anymore. Yeah. But
exactly. So that's the thing. You got to keep it real, Lauren, when you're a big TV star. But remember all the little people that helped you get there. So stay authentic, Lauren.
Yep. Oh, you know me. There's always someone to humble me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I believe that. In my world, there's a lot of people. I live with three of them in my house.
Yep, mostly the people I live with. Yep.
Awesome. Well, take care, Lauren.
All right, you too, Eugene. Thanks.
And that's our show for this week. Research for this podcast was powered by Sprinklr, the social media management platform. To find out more about them, you can go to sprinklrwithnoe.com. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on iTunes or the podcatcher of your choice and leave us a review if you will. It helps others find us. Also, we love hearing from you, the listeners, your story ideas, your thoughts on the tech world, and what you're doing as well, so that we can make this show as relevant to your daily tech life as possible. So hit us up on Twitter using hashtag InTechWeTrust. We'll be checking that daily to start conversations, engage with people, and get your thoughts. You can also follow us at InTech_WeTrust and give us your thoughts there as well. See you next time. Oh.